It's now my privilege to introduce tonight's speaker, all the way from Fresno. He has over a year of sobriety. I'll let him tell you more about that. His name is Johnny. Let's give it up for Johnny. Yeah! Woo!
Hey, I'm Johnny. I'm an alcoholic. Johnny! What's going on? Welcome to the newcomers. This is not an easy thing to do. Just being here right now shows a lot of willingness. It took a lot of willingness to just come to my first meeting. I was lucky enough to have the gift of desperation, which some of us have. So I have a sobriety date. It's March 4th of 2018. So I got a year a couple months ago. It's really cool. My first time getting a year. How is my, am I too close? Is this, okay, cool, perfect. All right. I've tried to come in this program for the first time. It was September 27th of 2016 was my first sobriety date. Came in very desperate, and, you know, without coming in that first time, I would have never got AA, you know, engraved in my brain, which this program will do. If you relapse is part of your story, I've become very grateful for that. Without having the relapses, I wouldn't have learned what I had to stick around this time. I've also don't have anything prepped for you, so it's all off the top. 5 seconds ago, I was just telling myself, like, man, you're not nervous at all. Like, you're killing it. But now that's completely changed. So I'll just start off with a little background. I grew up in Northern California. I had a very addictive personality at a very young age. I think cigarettes were the first thing that I thought was really cool. It was easily accessible. I'm talking 4 or 5 years old. My grandma, my nana on my mom's side, she's kind of out there, man. But she used to let me light her cigarettes. And I'll never forget this day. We were driving the car, and she asked me to light it for the first time. And I was just holding a cigarette out, lighting it like this. And she's like, no, you're doing it wrong. You got to put it in your mouth. And then so I did, and that night went back to Nana's house, and after lighting that cigarette, she fell asleep, and I hit her butt can really hard. It was, she's a hard sleeper. She took a lot of sleeping meds, so she was passed out, and she literally had a coffee can just full of cigarette butts. And man, I got so sick because I just kept lighting up one after another. It was the coolest thing. And that's kind of where it started, as far as like doing things that I know I shouldn't. I was probably 7, 9 years old, somewhere in there. I was going around, we'd go to Walmart. I'd take a Ziploc bag with me to Walmart, and then while we were in there, I'd say I'd have to go use the restroom and then take off out front and go to the ashtrays and pick out cigarette butts, put them in the Ziploc, and take them home. That way, I was rich with cigarettes when I got home. I had all of these cigarettes. And it was just like, it's really embarrassing, but that's the kind of person I was. I watch movies, people doing blow and stuff. At 11 years old, blow really isn't super accessible, so I substituted it with Excedrin. I would crush up Excedrin and like snort it, and like didn't do much to me, but I felt really cool doing it. One movie I saw, people were taking shots. They had the shot glass on the counter, and they like did a hands free, and they were doing this and stuff, and I was like putting Sprite in shot glasses and doing it, just like, you know, just trying to be this party guy at like a really young age, and like not even realizing what I was doing. My first drunk was later, but My mom was a really hard wine drinker. She was a classy wine drinker. She'd, you know, treasure these expensive bottles of wine, and at a young age, she let me take a sip out of it. You know, I never got to the point where I got any effect from doing that, so I didn't really fall in love with it right away, but I knew what alcohol tasted like, and, you know, it was a normal thing for my family to be like, yeah, you can have a drink, but I never got to the point where I felt that effect that I eventually fell in love with. So I think my first real drunk, I was in seventh grade, and my parents were out of town, and I had my buddy come over, and there was always cool stuff to find in a garage if you look hard enough. For some reason, like, it doesn't have to be alcohol or anything illegal, but just, like, you can find something to play with or something to do in the garage if you look hard enough. I'm telling you, like, right now you could probably go do that. Like, there's random shit in a garage, like, and, anyway, so we were looking for random cool stuff, and we found two tubs of just hard liquor, and this is liquor that probably got moved to that house from their little stash they had and never got into. So it's just a ton of, like, half bottles, quarter bottles of all these different things. And so we started off by just, you know, taking little swigs of, you know, whatever we grabbed first. There was the bottle that really sealed the deal was, it was called Hot Damn. I think that's, like, the equivalent of today's Fireball, maybe. I don't remember exactly, but, man, it tasted good. And, like, my my stepmom, she's Mexican, and, like, I love spicy shit. Like, I really do. Like those little, the little Fireball, little Jawbreaker things. Dude, I would tear those up, man. I would be the plug at school for those, too, because I'd have a bunch, and I'd just shoot them out to people. But I love the taste of this Hot Damn, and it was really easy to drink. So I drank way too much. And this is like 11 or 7th grade, I don't know how old. Anyways, my buddy and I rode our bikes to my house, and we were planning on going back to his house. It didn't fully kick in when we left, but about halfway to his house on the bike, it definitely kicked in. We were falling off our bikes, just like, it was the coolest thing. Like, we could not stay on our bikes. Like, we were like, what is happening right now? Like, you know, everything was funny. I swear, he lived maybe two blocks down the road, and we didn't get there for an hour or more. It took a really long time. But we finally did make it back, and, you know, we had all this activity. We were moving around and having fun, and then we got in the house, and we calmed down, and we sat down. And that was the biggest mistake I made that day. I think if we kept riding our bikes, it would have been all right. But once I, like, settled down a little bit, I started feeling really bad. And I continued to throw up Hot Damn all over his carpet. And I was never invited back to that house. You know, I hope that they replace that carpet by now. But, you know, that was the day I think I really found out what it did to you, what it could do to my body, how it could make me feel. You know, ever since then, I knew what it would do. So, that being said, I looked for every opportunity to do it. You know, I would go sneak out my bedroom window to go, like, drink at a party or whatever. But I was really, like, I was scared of my mom, and, like, she would, like, ground me, and I don't know why. Like, I was just, like, I didn't want to be grounded, so I'd do, like, really dumb stuff, like ride a bike 20 minutes and just, like, go slam a beer and then ride 20 minutes back real quick, just because I was scared of her, like, coming in my bedroom. So I figured if I'm only gone an hour, she's probably not going to catch me. But I'm still the same way. I don't want to get caught at shit. I don't like the cops. Like I was really scared of cops. And I don't know what that has to do with anything, but yeah, so anyways, like 7th, 8th grade is like when I really started to like try and like drink. You know, that's when I would stay up really late so all the grown-ups went to bed and go hit the keg after everyone was gone. And, you know, this just progressed. That's, like, when it started. Like, you always hear, like, this is a progressive disease. And I think from that moment is when it really started. So my mom ended up moving to Maui, moving to Hawaii when I was in eighth grade. I had just moved with my dad about 2 months before that, and when she moved, she was just trying to get me to move out there with them. She's like, you know, you're living out in, I was living in Avenal, by the way, with my dad. I don't know if you know where that is. Gorgeous. So I was living in Avenal, and she's just telling me all, like, Hawaii is amazing, you got to come out. So it didn't take a lot of convincing, so I did go to Hawaii. Went to high school in Hawaii. There's not a whole lot to do when you're young. There's a lot of drugs and alcohol, you know, and that's where I really felt at peace. Like I felt myself. You know, all through elementary school, I was like a really popular, funny person, and you know, for some reason, I thought, after I started drinking in high school, that I needed that to be the funny, popular person. I started feeling like if I wasn't drunk or if I wasn't under the influence, that I was a boring whatever, you know, how we I'm a piece of shit. So I started doing it as much as I could. I would take the bus down. My high school in Maui was on the top of the mountain, and I'd ride the bus down to the beach every day. Go to the beach, and we call them the uncles, but they're really just the homeless people living on the beach. But the rule was if you bought them a 40, they'd buy you one. So, I mean, it was really, really easy. So it started off, you know, 140 after school. You know, that progressed to like 140 and a Sparks. I don't know if you guys remember like the little energy Sparks back in the, anyways. So it just kept increasing, like, you know, increasing. So it was like 240s. I don't know why. I tried everything, but like Mickey's, I was drinking Mickey's a lot. I don't know. Went down smooth, I guess. I don't know. But it got to the point where my mom would notice. She would notice and she would ground me. So I had to start coming up with different ways to get it. I had to start sneaking it and doing all this other stuff. I'm going to have to speed this up a little bit. Drinking a lot during high school became a normal thing. Eventually, I became an adult, which happened just from me getting older, not by how I acted at all. So I ended up moving back to California after high school for about a year. I was up in Northern California, started working at this country club. Met a girl who smoked a lot of weed and accepted my drinking, and I used that as a key point in our relationship. I can drink as much as I want because you smoke all the time. And if you want me to quit drinking, why don't you stop smoking? And it was something that she couldn't give up the smoking, and it allowed me to drink as much as I wanted to all the time. So I manipulated her to come back to Hawaii with me. So we flew back to Hawaii, and the drinking at night and the parties gradually moved on to I needed it first thing in the morning. I found out that the best cure for hangovers is to start drinking. And nothing works better. And I tried eating certain things. I tried, you know, pounding a bunch of water before bed, everything you can think of. And nothing worked like slamming some vodka in the morning when you wake up. You know, nothing worked better. And that, you know, gradually moved to drinking, you know, a little bit more every morning. Until the point where I was just drunk from the moment I woke up till the moment I passed out at night. You know, I would go to work. I'd have a pint on my way to work of vodka, just on my way. Airplane bottle shots were really, really cool and convenient. sneak them in my pockets, go to the bathroom at work, you know, take some shots. But it got to the point where I was drinking like 3/5 a day, and that's a fairly good amount of alcohol, at least for me. It was just throughout the day, and something happened to where I got laid off from. And this whole time I'm drinking like this, I don't know what I did, and you know, I was super self-conscious, and I wanted to always like smell good, so I'd always have cologne and like wash my hands and be chewing gum. Vodka doesn't smell at all, is what I really thought, but you know, it did, and I don't know how I got away with it for so long, but. When I was 24, I believe, I ended up getting laid off from, I ended up getting fired, but I was really cool with the manager, so they laid me off. So I ended up getting unemployment, and I was making like close to $2,000 a month sitting at the house, and that was amazing. It was like I had money to supply myself with alcohol, and I didn't have any responsibilities. Like, I didn't have to go to work. I didn't have to worry about anything. So during that time I was laid off and at home is when I made my goal to be like a fifth a day. Then it turned into 2/5, and then it was 3/5. And you know, during that time, the last couple of weeks of doing that, I was laying in my deathbed pretty much. I wouldn't get out of bed. I had my partner running to the store for vodka all the time. I was laying down and propping myself up just to drink and just staying in this position so much that my whole arm was black and blue. I had nerve damage in my arm just from, like, holding myself up. I wasn't eating. I don't know if it's sleeping or hallucinating, but it got really bad. And anyways, it got to the point where my partner called my mom to come over, and she immediately called the ambulance. And they came, and I think just some activity in the house, having cops and paramedics in the house, gave me like an adrenaline rush, and I was able to like get out of bed. And for some reason, it's like we can't force them to go. And you know, meanwhile, I couldn't get out of bed. I couldn't walk myself. The girl I was with at the time was really small, but she had bruises all over her body by trying to carry me to the bathroom because I couldn't get there myself. You know, so anyways, when the ambulance came, I refused to go. I was not about to go. And then something asked me, or something told me, to talk to this police officer that was about to leave. And I asked him, you know, should I go to the hospital right now? And he says, you know, I really think you should. And I think that if you don't, you're going to die in this bed. And so I went. And thank God I went, because that was probably the truth, and I probably would have died in that bed. When I got to the hospital, I spent 8 days in ICU. I was on my way to cirrhosis. I had a fatty liver. I couldn't lay on my side, couldn't do anything around the stomach area because it was just, you know, enlarged. And, you know, I was physically really, really beat. When I got out of the hospital, my girlfriend that I was with for quite a few years, she had flown back to California, so she was gone. The house I was living in, everything was out of the house. The car we had was voluntarily repossessed. So I came out of the hospital really, really beat, mentally, physically, emotionally, the whole deal. And, you know, that's what I talked about earlier, the gift of desperation, because, you know, I was convinced not to drink myself to death, but that's what would have happened if I didn't end up going to the hospital. And I think that's where, you know, my higher power comes in. That was my higher power who made me talk to that police officer and get, for some reason, trust him enough to say, yeah, you should go to the hospital. You know, that's what I feel is the first time that happened. So I got out, was strongly suggested to go to some AA meetings, which I did. I took a 30-day chip, still having DTs. I was shaking for my first 30 days. And life got better. I wasn't working any steps. I wasn't doing anything, but I stayed sober for a few months, and life got better. And the only difference was that I wasn't drinking. I was still really fucked up. You know, this disease, not only, you know, is it the physical and mental, but, like, I was literally ready, just setting myself up to go out because I was not doing anything that was suggested in these rooms. And I did. And from that point on, instead of just staying home and getting drunk, I ended up in hospitals a lot more often. I ended up on a 5150 hold in the psych ward. All those things that they say end up happening that are yes ended up happening to me. You know, I got the opportunity to come down back to California and try and get sober out here. And my last night, before I got on the airplane to come down here, I ended up thinking what a lot of people think before they go to rehab is like, man, this is my last chance to really go hard. I got to. I mean, I'm going to be sober tomorrow. I'm going to rehab. I'm going to drink as much as I can. So, yeah, so at the airport, I got hammered at the bar, just completely hammered. Talking in Hawaii, because I lived there, it was really fun to talk to tourists, just because you're the man. If you live there, you're local. So I was talking to tourists, getting hammered, drinking a bunch of Jack. I get on the plane. I start getting really friendly and nice talking to people. Long story short, I got kicked off the plane before it took off. So there's my shot, you know, and in my mind at the time, that's God saying, you're not supposed to go to California. You know, after I got kicked off the plane, I ended up hitchhiking to a store. They had just stopped selling alcohol past that hour, so I found some dude who just bought this bottle of Crown, and I bought it off him for $200. Because, you know, I had to have it, and you know, that weekend, I'm not going to go into details, but it involved myself in a place of Maui they call Happy Valley. It's pretty much the ghetto where you don't go. I ended up in the middle of this forest in a treehouse in the middle of nowhere, drinking that bottle of Crown and smoking a lot of outside issues. I did make it back to California, though. That's the great part. After I had that weekend, I ended up getting on a plane, getting here. My dad was you know, supportive in me getting help. And eventually I did end up going to a meeting, which led me to a young people's meeting where I met my sponsor. I got into service. I started taking suggestions. I had relapsed, and I say I'm grateful for relapse because I got to see what they say. I got to experience it. I got to experience the fact that after a few months sober, you go back out, you're right where you started or worse, most of the time worse. You'll hear people say, you know, the whole time you're sober, your disease is in the background doing push-ups, because it is. I went and had a drink after a few months. It was a bottle. I was chugging bottles, and that's where I ended up, back in hospitals. And you know, anyways, I got in service. I started taking suggestions. I was willing to do anything to get sober, and not only get sober, but work on myself. You know, the steps are designed to help us stay clean and sober, but work on a lot of other shit that's going on in our brains too. You know, as an alcoholic, I have a lot of crazy thoughts and ideas. I have a lot of character defects. And I wanted to work on those things for the first time. And I did. I met with my sponsor religiously. I was eager to work the steps because I wanted the results. You know, this program is amazing. Meetings are amazing. But, you know, a lot of these people that have time, you know, they've gone through the steps. They have a higher power. I'm not a religious person. I don't really say God a lot. I was scared by the term God. I was very grateful that the big book lets us choose our version of a higher power. And I think that's really important for anybody that's new that thinks they can't do religion or, you know, this God thing or Jesus Christ. And if Jesus Christ is your higher power, that's amazing, because that's a power greater than yourself. And for me, I don't have a name in my higher power, but I know that it's something bigger than me. It's something that I pray to. And that's the first step, is just being willing to be open-minded. And that's what I did. And ever since then, my life has gotten a lot better. I have a lot of great friends that I didn't have. I thought I had friends. I had more of acquaintances. I had people that would hang out with me until I annoyed them so much that they dropped off the face of the earth. I kept looking for somebody who could drink as much and long and as hard as me, but I ended up drinking by myself. I could be with eight people and 3 o'clock in the morning, everyone's passed out, and I'm just like drinking, looking for shit to do. And that's when I started moving on. And then I never had a group of friends where I could like call them and constantly hang out with or anything. And I think, you know, part of it was like, you know, I was surrounded by people, but I was lonely. I didn't have the ability to create, strong, healthy relationships with people. I didn't have that. And this program has allowed me to build relationships with people that, I've never experienced. There's a lot of people in this room that I know personally ever since I got sober. They saw me come in, you know, with a couple of days, and they've seen me, you know, throughout the year, and it's amazing. Sorry, I guess I gotta breathe. I tend not to breathe when I talk to you. Like, I'll just, like, yeah. So anyways, I just want to express how grateful I am for AA. If you're new, even if you didn't relate to any of my past and my story, that's okay. If there's some similarities, great. But the thing is that we're all in this room for some reason. Whether you hit a bottom and have cirrhosis, or whether you got a DUI and you're on a court card, or anything, we're in this room for a reason. And fortunately, I see, in this last year, I've got to see a lot of people come in these rooms that haven't had to reach that bottom, that haven't had to lose everything. And that's really, really cool. And if you're in here and you didn't lose your family members, your trust, you didn't lose all the material things, if you didn't end up in the hospital, be grateful that you're here before that happened. Because, those are all yets. Like, this thing doesn't get better. It gets worse. And, I'm grateful I'm here when I am. I turned 27 this year, and, like, I feel like I get judged a little bit. I'm young. I didn't go through that much. I didn't drink as hard. And, shit just happened a little bit quicker for me than some people. Just because I'm 27 doesn't mean that I wasn't living under a bridge at one point in my life. I've been homeless. Drugs were a part of my story too. All of it, I went through a lot. And I guess the point I'm trying to say is, you don't have to go through all that to get clean and sober. You don't have to wait for those things to happen. That's always what I thought people would say. Johnny, you got a really bad drinking problem. And I said, you know what? I got a roof over my head. I pay my bills. You need to back off, dude. Like, I got this shit covered. Like, I'm not living under a bridge. I'm not. Those are yes, because it did happen. But, I'm not doing those things. And eventually, I convinced myself that I wasn't long enough to where those things happen. I'll share with you an experience where I finally acknowledged I was an alcoholic. This was during my laid-off period while I was drinking a lot of vodka. And My girlfriend had taken off to work without getting me vodka in the morning, and I was very upset. So I didn't want to walk to the store because I was sick. I was shaking, I was vomiting, and I needed my medicine in the morning. Excuse me. So I went to my shed where there was garbage bags full of empty bottles, just filled with empty bottles. And I went in there, and this is Hawaii, so it's hot regardless, but now I'm in this shed that has no windows, and it's like 100 and, I don't know, humid. And I'm going through every single bag, opening every single bottle, and pouring every last drop into a red Solo cup. It was probably 100 bottles or more, until I got maybe that much. And that's, at the time, like I was drinking anything and everything. I mean, I drank more vodka when I was working because I thought it didn't smell at all. But I mean, I was buying the $9 rum, Hanabe rum. I'll never forget it. Oh, ugh. It was really bad, dude. I'm not crying. I'm like gagging a little bit. It was really bad, but if you drank it really quick, you get really fucked up really quick. And that was my method. I was trying to get messed up. I wasn't drinking to have a good time, wasn't drinking to socialize. I was drinking for the effect, and I needed the effect fast. But I had all these different bottles of everything. I pounded that Solo cup that took me a long time to get, and that gave me enough courage and enough not sickness to hitchhike to the store and get a bottle. And that's, I think, when I had like this experience sitting in that shed, sweating like no other, pouring stuff in that Solo cup, where I was like, man, dude, you got a fucking problem. Like, it is bad. You are like, that is, you know, you're not normal anyways, but this is really bad. And, I mean, that didn't change me. I didn't stop drinking or anything. But, you know, it was something that, like, I acknowledged, like, dude, okay. Like, you need to acknowledge the fact that, yeah, like, this, you cannot do this normally. My life was extremely unmanageable. Extremely. I thought I managed it. And alcohol can convince me that all of my problems, I don't have any problems, and when there's tons of them. But the moment that I have a few minutes of sobriety where I can, like, think and look at my life, it's completely unmanageable. I have no control over it. And that's the thing about my drinking, is I drink to not feel. I hate that feeling of any other feeling other than, you know, not just being out of myself. You know, I wish, I honestly, I'm going to tell myself right now, like, I think I have a caffeine problem. Like, Caffeine Anonymous is the next step, I think. I drink a lot of energy drinks. But you know what? I'm sober today, and I'm okay with that. My life is really good. You know, material things are one thing, but today, I'm still crazy. That hasn't changed. I hope that if you're new here, you don't think that you get a year of sobriety and then you're like this new person with no problems and your thinking completely changes and everything changes, because I'm still crazy. But at least this program has taught me to acknowledge the fact when I am being a little crazy, and that I can do things, you know, to change what I've done. We have these things called amends today, where I can do some harm to someone and not realize it, but I can go and make it right. You know, there's these characters, somebody was up here talking about character defects. Got a lot of them. I did a step where, you know, I write out all these character defects and I pray for God to remove them from me, my higher power. And it doesn't just happen like, you know, like that. That's something that I talked to somebody when I was driving up here, and he was talking to me about his character defects, and I told him, I was like, you know, you got to continuously pray for your character defects to be taken away, and you got to work on them, and this is a progress thing. It's not perfect, and I will never be perfect, and those character defects that I have will never completely go away, but at least I can acknowledge when they're coming up and do something about it. I have not been doing as much service work recently. Service was a huge part of my recovery when I first got sober. I recommend anyone who's, you know, either in treatment or if they don't have a service position to go and be of service. It helped me stay in the middle of the pack. I needed to be surrounded by other alcoholics. I needed to be accountable, for people to keep me accountable, because my mind would let me and tell me things. Because I'm an alcoholic, it would tell me that, you know, it's okay to drink, it's okay to do this. But, you know, by surrounding myself by tons of other alcoholics and working these steps, I was able to stay sober. And, I have a year and 2 months, which I'm extremely grateful for, but every day I have to continuously work on it. Because I'm not doing it perfect. Somebody I know very well always says that when your life gets big, your program has to get bigger. And that has happened to me multiple times. When your life starts getting better, it's very easy to forget how you got to that point. I got to this point by, working with the sponsor, working the steps, being of service, and all these other things. But when life gets good, you forget about it. And as soon as I stop doing those things that got me here, my life starts feeling a little bit more unmanageable the longer I don't do those things. I still have to put myself in check and remind myself of how I got here. A lot of times the simplest things, like saying the Serenity Prayer. I got the Serenity Prayer tattooed on me, part of it. And, it was the thing that made sense to me. Nothing made sense when I first came here, but, it made sense, you know. It's really hard for me to accept the things I cannot change. I want to change everything. I feel like I have control to change everything, but I don't. There's also things that, you know, I have the courage to change today. And I need the wisdom, you know, to know the difference. And I get the wisdom by coming to meetings and hearing people with years and years and people that have been through things that I am going through. So I'm running out of time, but I just want to say, if you're new here, stick around. Give it a shot. Get a sponsor. The solution to this thing that we have in common is the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's where it's at. A lot of people can just go to meetings and not work the steps, but they may be sober, but mentally, a lot of them that I know personally are very sick mentally. They're still very, very sick, and I'm grateful that these steps have helped with a lot of those things. And I hope that if you're new, you keep coming back and you take suggestions. Willingness is key. Even if it's something that you don't want to do, that you think is stupid, you got to surrender. A higher power is not a person. It's not your girlfriend. It's not your boyfriend. It's not your sponsor. But you need to find one, and that's comes from prayer for me. I started praying to something I didn't know what it was, and I prayed and I prayed and I hit my knees, and I still don't know exactly what it is, but it's a power greater than myself, and I know that He's been watching over me, and He got me this year and 2 months of sobriety. Without my higher power, I would not be here today. Without working the steps, I would not be here today, and I'm extremely grateful for my sobriety. Thanks, guys.
We give him one more round of applause.